Oh, okay, so everything is here. Is there a motion to approve the October 10th? And then Mr. Sempler for the 10th minute to approve the October 24th minute. You all want to post any of those? Are you very last minute?
I need the pantone.
I would generally say to the staff that we can do them by considering that.
That is minute 24 to be approved by unanimous consent. And then the show is the addition of the presentation of the report. So I'd like to discuss the meeting that we had last week. That is Richard, Ashley, Kelly, and I are present for that. And we were able to discuss what the now that meeting after this, but we do have some ideas of the following code. We have about 30 minutes and presentation, about 30 minutes and about 2 for every project of the meeting. We'll probably be signing past everyone, if we didn't fully get that. Three or 2 minutes. So you all are going to be able to.
Yeah, one thing is there's so many good managers that are doing out there. I thought us to kind of run through some of the highlights of the report and then really help with the questions and sort of help with the talk. Every year when I do the report, I always include the every code that gets used to be put in the university archives and so on, make sure that everything is in place. So even though it's 157 pages, something to really show it comes really consistent. So after I really kind of mentioned what I thought about the past year, some of the things that were really clear was that there was a lot of leadership change in the university, and so that really changed how different policies were interpreted. Sometimes they became more narrow, sometimes they became broader, and so 2018 was really reflecting the fact of some things that we thought were good some practices. I'm just thinking about different perspectives leading up to one of the most conversations about that. The tech campus, and it was really clear that that campus was built with not very good student services. It's a very strong academic build, but the idea of even just where to get dinner is something that was overlooked. And so, unsurprisingly, we saw a lot of leading to, just issues that came up from a comment perspective on the tech campus. We saw increasing complex phasing pieces. None of them has been surprising to see the publications on the VBA website from point out how the publications. And so means I can't stress the amount of time and the amount of effort these things take. Conservatively, it is increased from the time that we get a report until it's done, about 200 to 250 articles. And that's because during the year, every year, during the year, it was hard. And with fun people back in, once you realize that they had to be full. And then we have to start to do things with students for not being able to bring people who are fun as witness, now as a respondent. And then we saw almost a 40% increase in case for virtual office. We think that's actually a good thing. I know that there's been some tendencies to want to be put in the office, but I think I'm really building trust that students aren't referring things because of the primary context we can ask. We're going to be able to make a difference in school. know, if they're doing underage and endowment, you know, to be suspended. And so I think we're starting to get that message of what I was going to do for the the nice thing was our office stayed pretty stable this year, so we didn't have any personnel changes. And I do want to highlight the really key work that members of the OJA are taking on a national scale. And so I went in our office, who is an AJA or Ohio, as a national position with the Association of Student County Administrators. And so I think that's really important because one of my goals is to really have Cornell be students the place where we do student conduct work. And really started a benchmark and a key example for that. As expected, we served on multiple university committees. And what was nice, we actually sat on a lot of work for the association. Just some kind of big things of note. But it's about the tech campus. I think the thing that really is just pushing the challenges for that campus are twofold. The first is that they don't have a traditional residence hall model. And so they have sort of a landlord's kind of thinking that some of the good work that the RAs and assistant teams, we just don't have that behavioral monitoring. And so we see a lot of complications with those spaces. The fact that Cornell Health and that public students there means that the first intervention for alcohol, so the basics, isn't available these students there unless they go to hospital agency. And so that's something we're really trying to work on, but and there's no pieces to either allow them to defer until they come back to the particular Ithaca or to one kind of local agency. Our goal is always to keep the education as contemporaneous to the behavior as possible. And so we've had the possibility of full semesters, a couple weeks delay, if that makes sense for us. Another interesting issue is that marijuana in New York City is a citational offense. And so what's happening is that when marijuana or substances were discovered, the police were pretty much like, why are you calling us? This is not worth our time. But we didn't want to have Cornell employees take possession of marijuana because that would be a violation of their employment contract. And so we had to figure out how to really sort those cases out. As with any time that a student is matriculating away from Ithaca, we always offer Zoom, Skype, but we also offer if they want to have a hearing versus some decision. And we would pay for their lodging and their Cornell busing, just to make sure that they have the full opportunity to get the process that they would like. Not surprising, and as was projected last year, speech continues to be an area that needs to be a campus-wide issue. The OJA's role in this was really keen at facilitating that we were educating community members on ways to that speech that they disagree with. That our office isn't going to shut down speech, but if you want to use your voice, we're going to tell you in ways that wouldn't violate the code. Really working with campus partners to make sure that safety needs of events are addressed and that we're complying with the regulations within the code. And I'm really happy that our office continues to be a place that we know that outside sources will be saying 1,000 different things about our office, but we never respond to that. And so part of the challenges of the role of the JRA is that I know that there's information that's inaccurate that's out there, but I'm not going to repeat it because I'm going to just make sure that the integrity of the process is preserved. And we continue to see that in speech realms. When I'm talking about some of the highlights for sanctions, I want to identify two. Last year, we implemented a suspension reintegration program. And this is based on the Circles of Support and Accountability, based on Robin Wilson, based off of First People and Indigenous ideas of restorative justice circles. We didn't have any students returning from suspension last year, so 2019 is the first year that we started to actually implement it. And we've had really good results with it thus far. But the biggest sanction that we implemented last year was our decision-making class. And we had over 40 students participate in it. And this is a class where we say, you know, the genesis of the problem wasn't, you know, setting out to do something wrong. It was just poor decision-making. And so we have four different curriculums that are taught by members of the JA, and then we have campus partners who help facilitate. So we partner with some folks with North Campus, Career Services, the Dean of Students Office. And it's really just a small group format, and then we do some large group discussions, but
that continues to be the class that we've had really positive feedback on. And it's a little bit sad that our bar is so low. You know, the feedback that students were saying is that I thought you were going to yell at me for 3 hours. And so it was much more enjoyable than I thought. I was like, well, okay, that's helpful. But we're getting really positive feedback, and it's a good interaction with students and campus partners. The other big sanction model that we used that was created last year was a hazing model. So what our office did in conjunction with some of our partners, including the Office of Sorority and Fraternity and Life and the Scorching Center, is that we overlaid a moral development theory over the public health approach to hazing. And so we really started to identify ways to tailor sanctions for respondents found responsible for hazing. If it was based on, for example, wanting to reduce harm, that they were saying, you know, I was hazing, but instead of doing hard alcohol, we did beer. And so it was less harm. And so, okay, that's coming from a care and concern model. And so really starting to address sanctions to help develop that and seeing that you were caring and concerning, but not to the point of stopping the behavior. That framework I presented with some of our Ivy peers and some of our colleagues, and that's something that I actually partnered with other campuses on, because there's actually no model for hazing sanctioning. And so we really are becoming the leaders in that room. And when it comes to statistics, one of the things that I'm really proud of is the dip of recidivism. So from 17 to 18, there was over a 20% drop in students who were referred to the OJ for more than one violation. So I think that's a couple things. I think that's showing that our educational sanctions are working. And I also think that it's students are making a little bit better decisions. And I also think that some of the risky behavior students are taking off campus. And so I think they're going to annexes, off-campus housing, instead of pre-gaming, for example, in the rest halls. We've also reduced the amount of calendar days between adjudication and report. We reduced it by almost a little over 27% this year. And so I don't think these are going to be numbers that continue to replicate, because I think we're pretty lean with how quickly we're doing a thorough investigation and going from there. But the one unanticipated challenge with adjudication is that last year we had many uncooperative witnesses. So folks who just didn't want to come in to be interviewed, which means that we then would have to bring code of conduct charges against those individuals for obstructing, which then delayed the underlying case. And so that's something that we're continuing to see both uncooperative and not even wanting to come, but providing false information when individuals do come. So that's something that I'm really looking for campus support on, really changing the culture and challenging that. When I look at kind of future considerations and needs for our office, we've talked about it ad nauseum, but the code, I think it's a need, a whole revision, and I'm glad we're talking about that tonight. Continuing to find any opportunity to dispel the scary J realm, but it's starting to change. Some of the jokes that I was able to do 2 years ago about being the scary J just aren't hitting anymore, which is good. I think it's starting to change, change the culture. We're continuing our partnership with the Scheinman Institute. This is the first program in the nation in which students are getting academic credit to adjudicate conduct cases. And so we're continuing to expand the breadth of cases that are handled in that realm. And this year I will also be creating a J advisory council to both get impact from campus members, but also alumni in that regards. Looking at the annual statistics, as I mentioned, referrals are up almost 20%, which is a good thing, but it's something that we're aware of when we're starting to think about the amount of work that our office is doing. As mentioned, we're turning cases around quicker, which again is helpful because we want to get that educational intervention as close to the behavior as possible. When we look at the violations, you know, 54 cases that hazing was charged. And again, that's both good that we're getting those reports, but it's a systemic issue that we really need to be very thoughtful on. And when we look at the obstruction or destroying evidence, that also includes overdue sanctions because there's no provision in the code for that. And so there are cases in which individuals have obstructed the code by not providing information, not coming in, but it's also what we use for non-completion of sanctions. When we look at the findings of not responsible, a little over 32% of our cases are found not responsible. And that's a number that I'm actually really happy with, because I think that it shows a couple things. It shows that we take the clear and convincing standard of proof very seriously. And that's a common phrase in our office, that if it was more likely than not, we would have had an opportunity for educational intervention. We always talk about that the incident report that we get in our office only has one side of the story. And so the fact that our case adjudicators are listening to both sides of the story, I think self-reflects that we are either not responsible, we can't meet our burden of proof, or there's facts that were not included in the incident report. And we always give the benefit of the doubt to the respondent. And that's been something that's been in place in our philosophy, is that if it's closed, then we can't. If it's tied, then we always give the benefit of the doubt to the student in every case. When I look at the classification of students, the only major increase that came last year was a 3% increase in senior cases. And that's a reflection of two things. We're seeing an increase in senior week cases. And we're also seeing an increase in hazing. So those are the two areas where we're seeing that demographic of students rise, where most of them are changing by reducing or small increase. I want to give credits to our athletic team. Our athletics department is very deferential to our office, and so even though we list the athletic teams, it's not a school where I think that the athletics department is trying not to report behavior. And so that's something that's really positive when you look at the numbers. Unsurprisingly, the highest number is football, and it's the largest team. The Greek chapters, I want to point out that Sigma Nu and Delta Phi are no longer organizations that are recognized by our campus, but they were. They had individuals reported from those organizations here. Again, I think the Greek numbers are low, but I think that reflects that the behavior is happening in annexes and off-campus houses. I mentioned the recidivism rates, and that's something that I'm really happy about. And I don't know if we're going to continue to see those trends, but I'm grateful for. And then finally, when we look at the sanctions, nothing too crazy. Reflective peace is of that nature. So that is kind of the overview and the highlights, and so I'm open to questions and thoughts.
So you are new to the committee, so if you want to ask questions, just raise your hand and come up with the speakers. Matt, your first one.
So first off, thank you. I always look forward to reviewing the report. I know you're off to doing a lot of great work, and having worked with the Shadows for many years, I'm always very pleased to see the mediation and the cooperation, that the collaboration is ongoing and doing well. I just had a couple of quick questions, and I guess two of them are housekeeping. I guess one in terms of when do you expect this to be posted on your website? I looked on your website right now, and it's still the old version. And in terms of the other one is in terms of resources, knowing that your office has seen a significant uptick in cases, you're working and collaborating more with other Cornell departments, and I mean, even one of your goals that you're going to hopefully finish the website reconstruction this year, I mean, that website reconstruction's been out there for as long as I can remember, which is going back a number of years. So in terms of, is it an area where you think that your office is in, I know your report says you don't think of anything, but is there an area where you think there may be a point for, where you need another half-time or full-time AJA or someone else to help you address the fact that, I mean, the campus is going to be growing, and with more referrals and frankly, more collaboration, it takes a lot more man hours. So is that an area you think you're going to be able to, if you're going to need anything? And is there anything we can help with that? The other one was just to provide some more context around this idea of a JA advisory council and where you're coming from that, where your thoughts are.
Sure. I thought that the report was posted, so I'll make sure they get posted.
Yeah, I just checked today. I mean, I do a pull from there instead of the box, it's quicker, but it was the 2017 version.
Okay, yeah. Our plan is what every group put up here, so I'll check for that. I think that when I think about resource needs, I think that the best avenue for me to report that is through HR.
Okay.
But I think any thoughts to say that you know, the JA is doing the work and in order to support the growth of that. As regards to the JA Advisory Council, I think that because our university is so decentralized, one of the things I've been noticing is that there's not a good venue to get feedback from folks who have come through our office before, and who are just interested in the work of our office, not from involvement in the UA or CJC, but just kind of your typical student walking through Trillium and having something to drink. And so I've modeled this off of some of the other advisory councils, the Vice President of Student Campus Life as an advisory council and things of that nature. And so I think it's just another way to get community feedback.
Thank you. Just briefly on that, we're certainly happy to help with that. I know, as you know, there's a new chair of the UA as well as HR will be doing the conducting, providing you and your office more feedback annually that should be getting off the ground shortly. So, I think it's great that you reach out to other groups. Oh, I just will note that, as well as even the resources, that the way the system is set up is that it's a dual drop, you know, it's kind of in between the president's office and the UA. So, we're happy to, and we hope to be able to help with that as well.
So I went here for undergrad a long time ago, so I was just wondering if, you know, over the years, how much easing has gone up or down. So I saw in the report it's the previous year and this year. Do you know, is there maybe, hopefully, a longer-term downward trend or no?
So I think when it comes to hazing, we're at the same place that universities were in Title IX in 2008, that they're starting to recognize that it's a problem, that it's not just boys will be boys, or fraternities will be fraternities, or sports clubs will be sports clubs. I think we're starting to get that level of awareness, and we're seeing that also on the national scale, right? So we're seeing these criminal cases, which reminds me a lot of where we were in pre-OCR revision. I think if you look at the hazing website, it's been very clear that hazing's been an issue for this campus for a long time, and actually, there's reports from about 1890 that we've had hazing on this campus. There's a book that many chapters are devoted just to Cornell about hazing from Hank Neuauer. And so I think when you're looking at the idea that we're eventually going to have a downward trend, I would hope so, right? That we're getting to the place that we would intend to see spikes for a while, and then hopefully we'll see a stabilization once we see a culture change. But the challenge with hazing is that it's so enriched with alumni traditions. So unlike sexual assault and gender-based misconduct, we're starting to see as soon as you get a set of about 4 years of students come through a university, you start to change the culture in regards to the peer-to-peer accountability. Working on changing the alumni involvement and really challenging those aspects is going to be the hardest part of it. And so the systemized nature of hazing, plus the fact that you see it in everything from academic departments to sports clubs to organizations, not the college groups on this campus, is going to continue to be an area where I don't think we'll see a decrease anytime soon. But the presidential mandates and things of that nature, I think, are going to hopefully start to at least have people make better decisions when they're aware of some of the consequences that are going to be mandated. Is that what you were looking for?
Yeah. Thank you.
So, Michelle, I have two sets of questions. One, stay here, and I'm going to put it off a little bit. But I'm looking at page 10, where you have the statistics, you know, the 19.4% and so forth. I'm looking at the violations and outcomes and wondering, you know, what the increase was for these different categories. Like, did alcohol violations go up more or less than the others? And the second question regarding that, not my general question, but the second question is, I'm looking at endanger persons, threat, use of force. You know, 20 responsible, 57 not responsible. That's remarkable because it's the inverse of all the others. So both questions, when was the relative increase and decrease?
Yeah, I don't have the 2017 numbers in this report, but I think that the increase was just probably proportionate to increased by 104 cases, since I would guess that the proportion would be
the pattern is the same.
Yeah. When it comes to endangerment, that's the broadest category in our code, and it's a really poor provision. So endangerment could be leaving a bike in front of a fire escape, and then we turned out, oh no, actually they didn't leave it there for purpose; it was already there, and so. I think because of the broadness of that category, we charge it because the incident report might find that that could be met. But I think the word choice and the language of that really does a disservice to the community, both from scaring students when they get an endangerment charge, or that's a very broad thing, because it also includes fire safety violations. So as soon as students cover up a smoke detector to smoke marijuana, they have an endangerment charge on their record. And so, I think it's just both the breadth of the charge and the fact that it's charged a lot.
So the broad question is this. From what I know, there's quite a bit of controversy between concepts of behavioral modification and deterrence, if I can put it broadly. And so when you say education, I hear behavioral modification. And I wonder just a bit whether, in what respects you would see deterrence being more important.
Yeah, so I think when it comes to deterrence, I think the best deterrent is education. And so that's one of the things that I really use in helping the UA is to have a place in orientation. The fact that CUPD and the OJ and other individuals that say these are the behavioral expectations for our campus don't have a mandated session in orientation is pretty shocking to me. There's not as much research as what's actually a really good deterrent. And so we've always taken the place that our responsibility to the community is after the behavior occurred if we can't prevent it by education. And so we always look at trying to adjust the skills that were deficient at the time that the behavior occurred for the respondent, repairing the harm to the individuals impacted, and repairing to the community. And we use the categories of reputational harm, physical disabilities, things of that nature. And so if there's research out there that talks about what would be a proper deterrent, I haven't come across it. And so if anybody is willing to share it, I'd be interested in it. But I think that we try and do as much education as we can. And that's the best way to help.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Two quick questions. So with the New York law changing regarding marijuana, and I know you said that now police don't exactly want to be involved, is there like a set in stone process that you're using when without police and without campus police? And then also, has it affected the way that sanctions are? Are sanctions less severe now, or is it unchanged through the university?
So just because New York is changing law doesn't mean that federal law has changed. And so because we're an institution that receives federal funds, we're still under obligation to adhere to federal law. And federal law says marijuana remains an illegal drug. And so it hasn't changed in that regards. I know that we're not on campus that's going to be doing like a green room or things of that nature. And I also know that other campuses and other schools have looked at things like reasonable accommodations for medical marijuana use, and that's not a place that we're going to. That is not a reasonable accommodation to break federal law on the campus. When it comes to sanctions, our sanctions for alcohol and drug use are pretty consistent. We do our AOD model, which is basics, as the first intervention, because that's the only thing that has some statistical research to it, and so we partner with Cornell Health. We always have a reflective component with all of our sanctions, but the idea of letting individuals choose what they want to do remains their philosophy. So if they want to smoke marijuana, that is the choice that they're making as an adult, but they have to understand that there's consequences that come with their behavior. And Casey, did I miss anything with
the answer?
Yeah,
well, there's talk with that.
Yeah, I think I may not have been clear. My main question was what the process was now when a student is caught smoking marijuana, if the police don't want to be involved in coming to campus, and I know a lot of you don't want like professors or employees being the ones that take it away because that's against policy as well. I wanted to know if that process has been set in stone.
Point of information, please. Entering the chair. Is Logan referencing Cornell Tech right now?
I was referencing what was brought up in the report. So I thought it was Ithaca, correct?
Yeah. It's just Cornell Tech.
Okay.
So our protocols and practices on our campus remain consistent.
Okay.
We worked out the protocols with CPD and the officers on the street. So, yeah, thank you.
And so it's only a citation violation.
In regards to the criminality, it still remains code violation.
I do want to ask, what is a group?
Well, it depends. Are you talking about an event, or are you talking about the green rooms being referred to a smoking room?
Oh, room and Sheldon Court, you know, on a Tuesday night that I have to get a phone call for.
Yeah, some campuses actually
have designated spaces. I've never done that.
The follow-up on that question was, it's also, I'm assuming it's education that we're still mentioning code action against any student that partakes in it, but whereas code doesn't necessarily apply to the court.
No, the code does cover the
code. So why is, like, what's the...
The comment was just on cooperation with police officers.
Okay. So we, since we have two people here. My question was on page 11, at the findings responsible, not responsible. I don't know if you answered this. I might not have caught it, but there's like a pretty heavy increase in findings and not responsible. I was wondering if there's any like adjudication changes that were made between the 2 years or policy changes that accounts for that, or is that like in the normal range?
I don't think there's any policy changes. I think that's probably reflective of more referrals coming to our office. And some of the referrals just don't have a lot of information. And when we do an investigation, there's no facts, so it's substantiated. And so I think it's good that people are increasing the reporting, but it also is an increase of other responses.
And also, like, what's the difference between not responsible versus neither? Like, what's the difference in the distinction?
Yeah, so, and neither is what we use for our Good Samaritan protocol cases. And so, an individual doesn't have a reportable finding of responsible or not responsible. But because those sanctions are still maintained by our office and referred, they get reported in our numbers. And so, yeah, and then the findings don't add up to 841 because not all the cases were adjudicated by the time that the report was run for academic year. And so, June 30th, 2018 is our last date, and so there's a third math people, the totals don't add to that, but I don't know if it'll be a trend that we continue to see an increase if not responsible. I think we'll just have to wait for a few more years for that.
One last like question. I haven't heard of it. What's the difference between GSP and GSP Plus?
GSP Plus means that there's Good Samaritan protocol, but there's something that's also not covered. So if it's calling for transport, but then they have a fake ID. Fake ID is actually.
So, can you touch a little more on what's been going on with seniors? You said there's been a change in the number of seniors that are getting
with the girls. Yeah, I think we saw that this year some of our graduating seniors just forgot that they were responded to the jurisdiction of code. So, probably the most serious case was that there was such a disruption of bus that they had to have. Share at campus because it's no longer safe for the bus driver to maintain an employment. That's a problem. We want to make sure that our students stay safe. But not surprisingly, when you increase the amount of available alcohol and the idea that there's this freedom, we always do have some senior week cases, but this year we saw a substantial increase.
I might want to speak to offline as a student assembly member and not share this committee because. We passed a couple of rule changes in how we fund the organization that organizes all the senior days events. That might have actually gone into effect, but the bigger change this year is with the calendar, senior day, senior week will now be 100% after the last exam, which I think might increase the level of freedom students feel. The number of events, so the number of events isn't changing, but previously senior week would begin still during the exam period. But now that convocation and commencement aren't moving, but exams are going to be sooner, there's going to be more time.
So first, kind of looking at locations of alleged violations, the one that stands out to me, the difference between 2016-2017 and then 2017-2018 is the Cornell store, like, just jumps onto the list with 21 incidents. Could you describe, like, is there a general narrative throughout all the Cornell store incidents, like what there is happening? Is it theft? Is it there? That's my first question.
Yeah, almost every referral from the bookstore is theft. And we see the range of everything from just a tube of bird's beeswax to
students who are still in textbooks. And so with all of our sanctions, we modify the sanction as to the reason why the violation occurred. And so.
Is like, do you see textbooks one being more frequent? No, that's
no,
kind of on the rare side.
Petty larceny.
And then second, a vast majority of like the locations do are North Campus residential halls. Are there any plans for outreach through the OJAs? I know like RAs are always offered the opportunity to host like program, and I know you have done one in Grizzly, I think this past year. Are there other opportunities where the JA's office will go more independent on educational opportunities specifically for North Campus? I mean, you said having a mandated one through orientation, I think it would be a great idea too, because we have Cornell Essentials for academic integrity. It would only make sense to combine Cornell Essentials of academic integrity, student conduct, because both are essential. So that makes sense, but the specific programming around North Campus, that's more intentional without the RA level of variability.
Yeah, I think that's something that, again, we continue to work on. And so really working with the new director of RMSP to have a more robust training program for the RAs and the RHDs. We also trained with West Campus this past year, which was really nice to be part of that training. I still think that the numbers are a little bit low for when we think about our peer institutions and the amount of behaviors that should be coming. I think there's a lot of different reasons that contribute to that. But yeah, I think we're always really open to anywhere that someone wants to invite us, we're keen to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, people will shoot them our way and then hold it hand in hand.
Thank you. In terms of the orientation slots, that's something that I know the UA, we can certainly help you with that in terms of now, so that you can say orientation. We can certainly talk offline and there's a meeting and talk about how we can get you more time in that area. The question that occurred to me, and we've talked about this before and have to talk offline, is in terms of the calibration of sanctions, in terms of, and I know this reading some of the from a last returning board decision, in terms of the record retention, and that's by your office, in terms of that seems to really, I think there's a case that comes to mind where the hearing boards were hesitant to impose a certain sanction because that sanction carried a record retention period that the hearing board didn't like. And after that, they eventually ended up settling on a lower sanction because they were concerned about record retention and how that affects students after graduation. I'm just curious, I believe you standardize them, and it's, I didn't know before the committee last semester with a copy of that. I just wondered, in terms of looking at the educational aspect, how you see the record retention thing interfacing with the goal to be educational and still trying to not be punitive.
Yeah, so the record retention policy is set by policy 4.7. I don't think it's punitive to have an accurate reflection of the behaviors and choices that people make. So I self-disclose I tend to speed. And semi driving record reflects that. My insurance is a little bit higher than it probably should be. But that's a natural consequence of my choices. I think when we're seeing so many of our violations include a police report, it's helpful to be consistent with the university to say we have reportable records both from CUPD, the Office of University Counsel, and from the JA's office. I also think that when we're looking at what colleges and universities postgraduate are asking people to reveal, they're asking any kind of study. And so the fact that we can actually report to verify the student's accuracy, we're helping them support that. And so, I don't see it as punitive. I see it as something that's just an administrative task.
All right. We're low on time for this section of our agenda, so Richard will be the last person. So anybody else that desperately wants to raise your hand.
If somebody else has a question, you can preempt me.
But I cannot be certain if it was ordered.
This is sad. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm so sorry.
Question for whatever information. Is Gina zooming in right now?
Yeah, she is.
So I guess point of information, was food ordered?
I'm not sure. Like,
she's, I know Pam is out today, but if food was ordered, just,
I think she's here. Yeah.
It should be canceled.
I had Gina. Can you confirm or deny whether or not food is ordered?
No, can't hear you, Gina.
Sorry, I was trying to unmute myself. What was the question?
Chair of the University Assembly would like to know whether or not food was ordered for this meeting.
Let me see what I can find out, and I will be right back to you.
All right, thank you very much.
So here's here's my question. It's a little bit like Joe's, but on page 11, where you have classification of respondent year in school. So freshmen are really bad people. And then sophomores are a little bit better. I mean, they're half as bad. Juniors are about half as bad as that. And then seniors, yeah, I mean, you know, that's not, well, anyway, I'm not going to say it. But looking at that, is this a function of people living off campus? Or is this really that they learn to be good citizens? Or they learn how to obey the law? Or what is going on? This is really remarkable. So
before Jay answers that, I do want to comment as a university professor, you see me
No, no, no. It's disbelief that seniors.
I'm kidding.
Well, I think our numbers are actually really reflective of what any campus would see. That your freshman class tends to be the one who they're going to taste the freedom for the first time, and developmentally, it's right kind of where they're meant to be. I think a couple things do change. Why we don't see a little bit higher sophomore numbers. I think that's because there's a culture of students moving off campus. When you think about the kind of bread and butter for a conduct officer, it's alcohol and drugs. And so once you hit that junior, senior level, they're over 21. And so you lose a lot of the fake ID cases, a lot of the underage drinking. So I think it is both a reflection of developmental age of 17 and 18 year olds, but also the movement off campus pretty early in the
And has the OJA made any projections of what would happen if the campus for the public became bad, not closed just the campus, the student conduct law?
When it comes to staffing, we have, especially when we start to think about the expansion of the campus, on campus, off campus is actually an issue that I don't have a lot of student feelings towards. I've been on campus where you have a boundless jurisdiction, and there's pluses and minuses, and there's definitely pluses and minuses to having a jurisdictional limit. And so I think that's one of the things that for the presidential task force and the hate speech working group had some commentary on. So I think just the first period.
More just asking if you think that it would be a significant rise in cases.
Yes.
Okay. That was- All right, with that, I think we'll end discussion. Oh, sorry, yeah, Joe.
Again, second time.
You're in the wrong column.
Whatever. This might be something just small, and maybe because I deal with this a lot. I, in general, responded, you just have it broken down between male and female. Is there in the future going to be change to incorporate individuals who might identify as not man or woman in those cases? Or is that like because of PeopleSoft or whatever?
Yeah, that's exactly. So we made sure we put the footnote to say that we pulled those from people's off.
Okay.
So if they were to change their designation, we would have to.
Okay.
Are there any other final questions? With that, we're going to move the discussion on the campus code. Thank you so much, Michelle, for your presentation. Gina says, it looks like I didn't request food. That is correct. I would suggest that they request.
Can we just get better food at the next meeting?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cost savings.
Yeah.
Double dose of angels.
Double dose.
We're going to start this part of the agenda by having Matt present his idea for restructuring the code that was part of our discussion last week. It doesn't include all the changes we want to make to the code, but it's kind of where we decided we wanted to start before we moved to incorporate any other amendments. And what I was thinking was that Matt had presented. There was huge backlash in the committee, we wouldn't proceed with it, but I think it would be good for the committee to give a vote of approval or disapproval on this idea and then move forward.
So thank you, Dale. So for those who were here at our last meeting, and actually, I've been talking about this and discussing it, I think, pretty much since last semester, even when I was still chair of this committee. I mean, my idea is looking at the capabilities of this committee, working heavily with the work group on hate speech and harassment, and knowing the level of community engagement and feedback you need if you're really going to do a nuts and bolts, really heavy change the code. My idea and proposal is, I think Ryan, the way he summarized it last time, is excellent. In terms of, you take the current code, you make it the best version it can currently be, and then you have the discussion of what, if anything, you want to make in terms of large changes. Because right now, the code, in my estimation, has a lot of what we like. It's just, I'll be honest, very poorly organized, very worded, and frankly, some of these were impenetrable. And because of that, my proposal is, I quite literally took the code, printed it out, took a gigantic table, and took scissors and cut it up into multiple sections. I did four parts. In essence, to try and break it up, so part one would be the values, part two would be the, part 2A would be your rights, part 2B would be your offenses in the code, and then part three is the A is the same, A sanctions, B is procedure. Yes. And then part four is just the administrative of how do you make the hearing boards work, how does the JA get appointed, what is the role of the UA, CJC, etc. And so in essence, that's a general framework of, and I went through and cut and paste it. I also, since the spring, and I'm sure those who've been around will remember, I've been going through this entire time and trying to not only reorganize, but also find versions that are poorly worded and either simplify them, take the detail, make a footnote, just try and streamline the code a little bit. I have that sitting on my laptop and I'm happy to email it out. And this is the idea being that once the code is in the very best shape it can be, A, we might realize we like it. We could realize there's a change we want to make, or we could say, you know what, actually, this whole code is not what we like. We want to really do the whole rewrite. But at the very least, it gives us somewhere to start from. Similar to in the past, right now we're talking a lot of just generalities, have some concrete language to look at. And also, in doing so, I should disclose that there are some areas where I have noted such that, for instance, the indefinite suspensions is somewhere that the Office of the President has no objection to us getting rid of. CJC in the past has wanted to get rid of. Michelle stated publicly in the past that her office doesn't like them. So, for instance, for those areas, I literally didn't put them across and put a note saying these are not being transcribed because it's something I think we intend to get rid of. But I've also, in essence, through notes, said, okay, here's where the UA or CJC has noted our intent to change. For instance, a failure to comply with sanctions we discussed last year, which is lacking in the code. A little bit of language around what Title IV regards, because that is a provision that's required under New York State law and regulation to make it public order. And then also, in terms of some offenses, in some areas, for instance, stealing or theft, or we're clear what we want. I also looked at the model code of conduct as well as other codes in terms of trying to find a better way to articulate that for things that it's clear what we want to say, but try and make it more understandable. So that's what we talked about. As I talked about this to the people who were there last week, that I talked about in general before, I'm happy to answer any questions. And as I said, it's all on track. So I'd be happy to send it out either tonight. I am traveling tomorrow, so I will actually have a 4-hour bus ride to handle email if I don't get it.
So, touching on the overall plan for the committee would be to spend the next 3 weeks, if we agree with this, looking at the new sections that Matt has made, going over the code as it's currently written, making sure he didn't miss anything while reorganizing, making any comments of where this new changes would make sense. And that's all we would be doing before our final meeting of the semester. Then, over break, we would continue working on the sections of next code that we as a committee have you assigned with at least two committee members. So I would over the break, I believe everybody can work on looking at that language in our current code, seeing where there are issues of clarity, comparing it to other codes that might have better language on those specific provisions, those ways to describe their judicial procedures, the way to describe those offenses and penalties, as well as looking over all the input that we've been given as a committee and deciding where, if any of it, if you were suggested as a committee, anything from the HB working group, anything from the president's letter, where that language could fit into your section of the code. So when we come back next semester, we'll have a reorganized, streamlined code, amended for clarity, and we can discuss which amendments we actually want to make to it. Then sometime in February, our goal would be to go to the president, to go to the university council, with really a complete draft. Not a final draft, but a complete draft of our changed code, streamlined with all the amendments we want.
I should also just note, I tried in doing so, my intent was to hew as closely to the current language and the current way the code is as possible. Anyone who's known me knows that I do have opinions on things I like and things I don't like about the code, and because of that, that clearly might have seeped into my writing. So if you find things where you think I missed something, please tell me. It is not my goal. Intent is to try and be as much as striking sentence, either copying it or trying to simplify it. Again, if a word I've chosen or a way I phrase it makes it add an opinion to it, that is not my intent, and please do note that when you look at it. My goal, as I said, is to really try and take this from point A to point B, because I think that will give us a framework. It also allows us, and this is without opening up the very contentious parts of the code, to actually get the code somewhere where we're in a good spot with it, because between the engagement you need to talk about the big issues is something that'll take, I think, years, and that's a good thing. But that means that the code should not sit in the current state as it is for the next however many years that would take, if that's something that we wish to do.
All right, before we go to questions, can you say again what the new sections in the code would be?
Of course. And this is rough, and obviously. So in essence, part one is values. And I'm sorry to say that's right now only page and a half, which I think we should change. But anyway, part one is values. Part 2A was rights. Part 2B was offenses. Part 3A was procedures. Part 3B was sanctions. And part 4 was administration.
Richard.
Well, just Matt and Dale and Lisa and Ashwin and I, somebody else.
Okay.
Yes, we're at the this working meeting last Wednesday, and when I really think this is a good plan, and I think really thanks to Matt for doing this. Somebody had to do it, and there's nobody who knows more about this code than we do. So I like the plan. One of the things that's about it, while it's a radical reworking of the language, it's not a radical reworking of the contents. So that most likely this is going to be a moderate and simplification of the code, rather than a sweeping one. And I think that's probably, and reluctantly, I think that's probably the right thing to do, because it's been so hard to think of, and radical revisions probably have a higher likelihood of being rejected in the end and so forth. So given all of that, I think this is the right way to go. And many thanks to Matt for doing it. This is real stuff.
And at best, if we finish the year executive here with the streamlined code without any major changes, it would really set the future groups to actually make those changes in the code. They can see a less confusing code.
And the two questions. The piece I didn't hear in the timeline was how we're going to community feedback. I know that there isn't supposed to be major revisions, but I think even if you think it's minor revision, people might have some thoughts on that and stuff. I think just making sure that we include built-in time to make sure that we include feedback in that aspect. And then my other question was just, did you kind of think about the groups that you think would go right with the sections? And
I think that's what we would be discussing now. In terms of community feedback, I kind of left it off at the very end of the story that I got to there, but I was discussing the work we were doing as a committee. Nothing would be sent through the UA yet when I'm talking about getting to early February. So when we're going to the president's administration, that would be the same time. And saying we have these changes, when we have that complete track, when we can actually sit down and discuss, this is what this language change would mean for you as a student, that would be when we'd be getting community feedback. So at the same time, if the community and the president tell us that we're completely wrong, we should know by the approval.
Yeah, DJ also was, as is, I think we talked about this as well, that it was point as is, you'll say, okay, the language was X, now it's Y, what do you understand it? If not, what do you understand? There they try and tease out the failing crisis where language was cleaned it up. We think we have it, people really still aren't getting it, and they're trying to have that engagement. So you absolutely need it. The goal is to do that alongside. We're working with the president and office of council. Actually, I spoke to them last weekend about just knowing that this is on the horizon. They're aware of it, and they're, as the president said numerous times, they're willing to plan to assist us in terms of going through and ensuring that we're not changing things. And again, knowing, as his president talks very gracious, that she understands that a code change will also be, in terms of, there may be things in the code she doesn't personally like, but she understands that is a whole part of a holistic package. It's not going to be, it has to be anything she likes, and that vice versa, she's willing to compromise in the middle, which is also why I think from a practical point of view, simplifying language that's already in there makes it a little bit, removes a little bit of the political politics, because we're in paper, not changing the operative portion of it. Whereas if we're changing versions, reworking things, then all of a sudden it becomes, well, I don't like this. Right now the response would be, well, it's already in there. We're
perhaps we're clarifying it, but we're not really trying to make huge substantive changes because that also removes some of the politics out of it.
I believe that was punching on the idea of actually having surveys sent out, which would have asking questions like that. But at the same time, it's great that we have everyone here today because we would also want you to endorse this code as a member of the committee and be able to go back to the GPS and EA, the Senate, and say these are the changes we're working on and get those bodies at the same time. Yes, yes. Students are still.
Can I get small? Yeah.
95.3%. Are there any other questions on this process? And of course, if there are major objections, that would be a great time. Okay. Then, with that, I need to ask, do you have that organized?
This is the hard copy. I have an electronic copy, which I think that I said earlier, I can send out either today or tomorrow, depending on my schedule, so we can have it out.
And it's organized in these six sections.
Yeah, right. And it says it's one document, but I can very easily bring it.
I think also it would be really helpful if you and I could sit down and try to just list every single page and partial page of any section.
Yes.
And then when we assign you the sections to review, you'll be able to see that as well. Just that stuff. And that would be sent out to you sometime next week so you can prepare for the next 3 weeks.
I should say this hard copy is not as organized as electronic copy because so it's easier to move things around when I can drag instead of cut off the scissors.
Now, I don't have a plan on how to divide these sections between everybody. If there are any ideas from the committee or if there are any sections you want to work on, again, right now we're going to start with values, and that would not be a lot of work for the next 3 weeks, but over the break, that would be a good section to think about what we want changed and added. Then we have rights, offenses, procedures, sanctions, and administration.
I'll just say the administration is that's the catch-all for the things that it's the most there, especially I think it's also the stuff that needs the least changing because. I mean, obviously, unfortunately, like you guys would be a bucket that we need to fix. But outside of that, the language can be a little bit more detailed because it's frankly that language goes primarily towards the administration and people who are more subject matter experts. It should be understandable, but the areas that need the most change are the parts that are more community facing that you want to make sure they understand. But so section part four is the densest because it's just a catch all.
Yes. We may be right beside the board, and then maybe less frequently.
Do you have markers? We have markers right here. Okay. I don't know how to spell
right. Right.
Reading the back of your.
While he's writing, do you want another section ready, or would you have thoughts?
I was thinking that we could all work on values together because we all have opinions on it and would set the tone for the other sections that we have, and then from there we can.
Also, while we're thinking about these very important sections in the code, please think about what food orders you want to leave here with for 3 weeks.
Well, what type of food are we getting?
No, so think about that now. Yeah. Oh. And then tell me again.
We have budget.
This is normal.
Administrative. That's okay. We know this.
I will say my spelling. I've noticed it's been going downhill. Spell check. I think I have no word. And then, yeah.
Is there an N?
You see what he spelled wrong? I can tell you that. But what it means. I noticed my spelling.
So I'm thinking I'm just going to start by making sure we have at least two people assigned to each of the five sections, 2A, B, 3A, 3B.
What was Cuddy's suggestion? To combine something with values?
No, I think Cuddy's suggestion was just that section one would be assigned to everyone in the committee.
It's still probably just going to have a lead person.
Okay. Would anybody like to be the lead person on the values section?
I would.
Does anybody object to being the lead person on the value section? All right.
Bouncing against 12
friendly. All Does anybody want to work on 2A? And if possible, I believe that it would be beneficial to have individuals from particular constituencies on each section. Does anybody else want to work on rights?
I could do that. We can make a simple one in the box folder then so everyone can see it.
Right.
So I think it's easier for everyone.
Is that a hand, Casey?
Yeah, sure.
Why don't I call you Casey?
Sure. After mine.
Offenses. You would also like to be offenses.
What?
Ryan
Parker.
Middle name?
Edward. My middle name does not have to be included in.
That's not what I was saying.
Who told you that?
I don't know my sources.
What was that? His full name or everyone else's first name?
Yeah.
Oh, we got initials.
Procedures. Anybody else for procedures? Sections. Why am I blanking on your
name?
Shashan. I don't know what that was. We only sit on three different bodies.
Yeah. Also, I should know we need to go back.
Oh,
yes. It's right here.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you guys want to make sure
you moved it in
that way.
No, I have one.
So I'm for administration. Does anybody else want to be on administration? It's a big section with a lot of shared governance fun.
I'll be on.
All right. So now, once we have these sections in the box assigned to you, the page numbers and the occurrence code that you're looking over, the primary goal of the next few weeks is just to make sure that that's a coherent group of information, that it makes sense to have that as a section, that we didn't miss anything in the current code that should be in that section, and that we're keeping track of redundancies in the current code that would go into that section.
Small test.
Well, you have 3 weeks to do each of those things to make sure that they did not completely fail at reorganization.
Any questions? I am happy to run through a chat
and
get coffee lunch or whatever.
I'm not going to do a working meeting next week. I think that's putting too many things on all of your calendars. I think the 25th is the Wednesday. That's 3 weeks from now.
Yes, the Wednesday after Thanksgiving and before the holidays.
So that would be the next time we're meeting in person. I may also consider moving us out of day hall so we can have a room like we did in Golden Smith last week that is more conducive to working and that you can get into after 6 p.m. isn't 4 floors of basement. So,
I'm sorry.
That makes more sense. And this will all be communicated to everybody. And if you think of anything you want included at that meeting, please reach out to me. Also include that. I know Risa and Richard, you were both heavily part of that discussion last week. Was there anything else we were going to assign in the next 3 weeks? It was just reviewing the new code sections, right? There wasn't any major language overhaul yet or additions.
So, yeah, maybe you could clarify just what people are expected to do by November 28th, because I think I'm hearing some different formulations of it, and it may just be me, but I'm a little confused at this point. I was at the last meeting.
So by November 28th, we want you to review the section that you've been assigned, look over the current code, and make sure everything that you believe belongs in that section has been grouped into that section by now. The other thing you're going to be doing is making sure that then makes sense. Should this be a single section of the code if we are doing 1, 2A, 2B, 3, A, B, and 4? Should maybe be broken down? Should it be reorganized a different way? So if we're going to proceed on this base, we want to make sure that these new code sections are a logical way to move forward. And the other thing that you should be doing is keeping note of all the times that we are taking near identical sections of the current code and putting those in the new sections. So keeping track of any redundancies in the current code that would be carried over to the new code and they'd be consolidated. I think a couple of those are going to be from Title IV. Because Title IV has been kind of kept together, the regulations for the maintenance of public order.
That is sort of flagged because it has this green for fences, it's put off the side because of, as of now, a flyaway of public order, and to actually change that requires direct board approval.
And so that's something that's going to have to be discussed. So, once we're knowing the redundancies, know if it's coming specifically from Title IV. Richard.
Yeah, that, just underline that, that we want in this draft that goes to the administration, we want to be able to identify all those cases, all those instances in which the original code has been moved but not changed. That is really an important part of facilitating their review, but also making it persuasive politically that we're not attempting to change the world.
So I think the plan for November 28th is to be able to sit down with our page one to page whatever completed reorganization that's annotated with where everything is coming from the current code and making sure that makes sense.
And then just to clarify, then once we do that and discuss it, then the next step over break basically is to actually make suggested rewrite.
And to identify clarity, any amendments that we want to make based on everything we've been discussing for a year now, because we've been on the committee for a short amount of time, I'll probably send out over the next few weeks all of the input we do have of changes that can be made. And I think in the November 28th meeting, we might want to start taking preliminary votes on those things. Basically saying if we don't want to move forward with these current amendments, then we're not going to waste time and break trying to find a way to insert them. And if we are, we could also make a note of all the amendments that we want to prioritize to get a general idea if you're working on that sanction section. We know that we're going to have to amend language in the sanction section to make sure that the person reviewing the section is ready to find a way to create that amendment language.
But even for instance, based on last year, there are things that we need to get through, such as not compliant sanctions, which are not contentious, fixing the clarifying the language of the appointments, and then things that are, I think, clarifying the UHRD appointments we saw in the semester to make sure the language is absolutely clear. Those are smaller changes, and there's obviously the bigger ones in terms of we talked about, okay, do you want to have a non-compliance section? Do you want to have a breach of confidentiality section? So you have a lot of, there's things that can be a lot more contentious, and there are things that truly, I don't want to call housekeeping, but they are lower on the contentious and more on the exact housekeeping system operating.
And we have the working group.
Report as well, yes. Yeah.
Are there any other questions before we end the meeting? Any complaints, ideas,
comments? Thank you, Dale. We work on organizing.
So right now the only food request has been pizza with anchovies.
So can we get pad thai?
I'd love that.
And a chicken pad thai. Pad Thai pizza, that's a wonderful idea.
Garlic
pizza,
good.